Perfect. Now I have your number. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. And I'm sure some of you have experienced your mind racing out of control, not being able to, you know, obviously we can't control our thoughts, but being more in control of our thoughts is a very important piece of life. I've had periods of my life where I've gone through times where I just feel like my mind's running wild. I guess some people call that depression. I don't really know. But I remember when I first started meditating back in 2019, that made a huge difference for me. And I was able to not control my thoughts, but allow them to pass, not dwell on negative emotions and negative shit. And today we have a really special guest who actually had me on his podcast not so long ago. And that's Dr. Victor Manzo Jr. Vic, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to be on, brother. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And your site is empoweryourreality.com. And your podcast, which I think you've got close to like 300 episodes, really awesome show. You guys should check that out. It's called The Mindful Experiment. And I was recently on there. The episode was called Inner Confidence. So Vic, tell us your story. How'd you, you know, become a trainer and a coach and kind of master, you know, your craft?
Love it, man. Yeah, it's an interesting story. It all started when I was in chiropractic school. My journey in there, we were learning a lot about the neuroscience of the brain, functional neurology, and a lot of the neural stuff. At the same time, when I was in school, I was also learning energy medicine, spiritual laws, universal laws. I was doing energy healing and things like that. So for those who may not know what energy healing is, you can heal with the hands, or you can use how to use the body as a tool to find what it needs. There's a lot of variables to this, and a lot of good studies that came out in the 70s, 60s and 70s is where this kind of movement started to happen. And from there, you know, I started to, as I learned it, then I was like, okay, if there's universal laws, there's a game to life, then how do I figure out the rules? And that's where, that was the question that kind of started the whole journey for me. And so I started to learn the universal laws was a great way because I'm very logical, but I'm also very intuitive. So it's interesting. I have the best of both worlds. And sometimes some people would say, but at the token though, at that point, I was able to be like, all right, what I want to know for the logical people, left brain dominant, how can I explain this? But then at the same token for the intuitives, I can show them that too, who are right brain dominant. And that's where this all began. And I started to apply the laws, right? Because my background where I came from, as I'm a chiropractor and so forth, but I came from a family that's, you know, blue collar, paycheck to paycheck, still living paycheck to paycheck. And it was, you know, a lot of struggle. Money wasn't abundant in our life at all. Things that I wanted, most of the time I couldn't get, or I had to save up and wait to get. And so I was like, I want to change that. You know, I see that. I see the ancestral curses. How do I break away? And so I started applying universal laws. I started looking into neuroscience. What part of the brain if you can shift and control it or redirect or rewire, if I could do that, then I can have a different experience and a different whole different reality. And so I started playing with these concepts for years. I've been doing this now for about 14 years. And it's one of the things where now in my life, I've learned that's where I started to get more into psychology. Then I started to want to, because as I learned the neuroscience, as I started learning the spirituality, the universal laws, they all interconnect. And then I was like, okay, now how do people think? What makes them tick? Why do they get triggered? What are those type of things? Inner child work, all that. So I started with cognitive behavioral therapy, neuro-linguistic programming. I got into a lot of these things because I really wanted to understand now the fabric to it all so I could put it all together and then be like, wow, here we go. This makes sense. I can share this now because I've done it in my life and it has transformed my life. And now it's kind of cool when you set the page for some, or set the path and say, this is where I want to go. This is my new reality I want to experience. And then you do the work and all of a sudden within, I don't know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, doesn't matter. The time doesn't really matter. I don't get hung up on time. Then all of a sudden it's like, here's my new reality. It's like, wow, okay, there is something to this. There is this game called life. And so that's kind of been my journey in the last 13, 14 years that helped me really grasp and understand this to the deepest level that I possibly can at this time.
Gotcha. What was one of those things that maybe when you first got into this, you were experiencing like struggle or hardship with that you were able to transform?
So in my, there's a lot of struggle that I had to transform.
I guess what was, like, the biggest thing? What was the biggest thing? Cause usually some people have some sort of inroad into personal growth. Like for me, I never really thought about personal growth or how I thought or anything about the brain. I was just like, you know, a dude trying to play golf and become a pro golfer, you know, at the end of college. And that, you know, I knew I wasn't good enough for that. And then I was like, shit, I should probably be doing better with girls. Most of my friends are like going out to the bars and, you know, meeting lots of chicks. And I'm, you know, not so good in that department. So I got obsessed with like dating. And when I first read like about these pickup artists, I just became obsessed with this idea of like getting good with women. And that led me into personal growth. But I had this pain, you know, around dating and just feel just that validation. I felt like I had zero validation when it came to confidence or being like a sexual man. So what was kind of like your kryptonite, for lack of a better term?
Love it. Yeah, no, it was, for me, it was actually early on being always told what to do instead of what I want to do, you know, and I can't do things. And this was, you know, parents, this is society, this was culture. There was a lot of levels to that. I remember in baseball, I was told this is what I would only be and that's it. And it was just like, I didn't like people putting limitations on me. That was my biggest fuel. So then it became inside me at one point, because I was young, I was in survival mode. So I was like, I'm going to prove them wrong. That was my motivation into self-help and development and all the personal development and all those things. And then it was that process and journey. But then one of the biggest ones, you know, I wouldn't say I was already in self-help and personal development, but financially too, I had to go through a point, but this was after chiropractic school. So I was already in this. I would just say, I didn't like things to be told that it was static. I didn't want to be told that this is life and this is your path and this is what you have to deal with. And this is what you're going to do. Being Italian Roman Catholic, it was kind of that way too. Like you're taught that early on. So it was a lot of cultural telling me how I have to do things instead of letting me choose. So my power was taken away from me a lot as a kid and growing up. And so then as I got older, I'm like, how do I get that back? And how can I utilize that power? And so that's why I think that power, that gave me enough passion to not only do it in my health, not only do it in my finances, not to only do it in my business, not to only do it in my relationships. It has inspired me in every facet of my life to say, okay, how can I be better at this? How can I, you know, create something different? This is not static. This can definitely change. So how do I do that? And yep. So I think that's where it cultivated this vast background of wanting to understand so many little, you know, every sector of life, basically.
Yeah, I hate being told what to do. I mean, I remember my first job it wasn't even really a job. It was like it was a volunteer position that gave me like perks. You know, it was at a golf course. I had to show up for 6 hours on Sunday to basically just like stand behind the desk and answer stupid questions. I wasn't even qualified enough to like open the cash register, but like having to show up on time and have like my shirt ironed, like I couldn't even do that. So you can imagine, like my first job at a university was at a private equity firm. Basically I was like an analyst, and they're just, people are constantly telling you, this is what you have to do, this is where you have to be. And I was like, fuck that. And I became an entrepreneur because I just couldn't deal with it. So I see that a lot amongst entrepreneurs, is that common kind of like yearning for freedom, or just a hatred of, you know, of rules, I guess you could say, or people telling you what you have to do, where you have to be.
Exactly, man. It's just one of those things where I don't like to be told what to do. Let me be me. I'm good at where I'm at, you know. And it's like one of the things where it's like, I'm good as like a team member. I'm a good team member, but it's like, just, I don't want to be told what to do. Let me do what I like to do. Even when I was in chiropractic school, I remember, you know, everyone was complaining about, not everyone, but a majority was like, because all these, it's basically a circus. You have to do all these little things that you're never going to do in practice, but it's just, you have to go through the loops of it all. And I was like, man, I'm going to get through this. But once I'm done, I'm not following any of the stigmas or what they tell us we have to do. I'm going to do it my way. I'll do it the right way. I'll follow all the regulations I have to follow, but I'm going to do it my way and the way I like to. And that's it. And it's worked out really well. You create your own craft that way. I'm a big fan of that. I work with clients on that all the time, trying to teach them like, okay, forget what your profession tells you how you have to do something. What do you want to do and how you want to do it? Same thing in dating, right? How do you want to do that? What, how do you want to be that way? There's certain tricks and tips to the game as you're an expert in that field. But it's one of the things where, you know, how do you make that unique? And I think that's what makes you stand out so much, because you are unique in what you do. You don't follow the standards of what, I don't even know what that would be, because it's not my field, but I'll leave it at that.
So you graduated from chiropractic school. Did you start your own practice, or how did you kind of transition out of that into being, a coach and what you do now?
Yeah, I came out of school and, you know, there was a doc who got me into the whole thing. And long story short, we were going to work together. He kept talking about it. And then when the time came, the storyline changed a little bit and I just didn't like that. And I was told I had to learn that way and that system and do that for like 3 years. And I was just like, yeah, now I'm out. I'm not, that's not me. And so then I had a couple road bumps along the way. Had an investor, he dropped out last minute. And so I was like, I got to do something. And I'm like, I'm going to go all out and opening up a business. I did it through, thankfully a chiropractor who gave me a break, as an independent contractor working out of her office. And it was a sweet deal. I mean, still to this day, I appreciate it. It was like $300 a month and I have a whole office to work out of like 2.5 days. And I was just like, that's all I need. $300 a month. I can handle that. And so that's what was my journey. And then it was just chiropractic. So into that aspect, and in chiropractic, we have a saying, you know, where 80% of everyone's issues from a neurological standpoint comes from the mental emotional component. And so that always struck me. And I was like, okay, why aren't we, you know, as a chiropractor, you think about chiropractic in the United States and it's all neck pain, back pain, headaches, which we don't do any of that. Even though we get coined to that, I'm like, that's not, we don't treat anything. So I don't know why, you know, I know why it happened, why it is like that, but it came to a point where as I kept working with patients, I have certain technologies I use in the office to assess certain things. And it got to a point where I was like, man, this people need some more mindset stuff. And I started looking at it and seeing it. And I would share some things, just simple stuff like, hey, let's do some breath work. I'll give you some recommendations. Here's to do some meditation. Nothing fancy. I mean, I don't go in depth with it too much, but I would share some stuff. And the ones who did the work, it was always fascinating to see how if we were stuck in a certain way, all of a sudden with that help and everything else we're doing, it would all of a sudden they would get better through a neurological standpoint. And I was like, okay, there's some things to this. And so then all of a sudden had an inkling. I was going through some health issues where at one point I thought I couldn't practice anymore. I used to have scoliosis. And basically for those who don't know, if you're looking straight at me, I look like I have an S in my spine. And over time, there's a technique we were starting to do that actually helped.
Like this?
Yeah. Like, so like, if you look at me, I'll have like, well, not anymore, but it would have like a wiggle S. You would see like it like
that. If you're this way or if you're straight on?
Straight on. Yeah.
Really? So yeah. You're like crazy. Okay.
And it's interesting too, because the body adapts so amazingly. Like even chiropractors who used to evaluate me in the past, they'd be like, you have scoliosis. I'm like, yeah. They go, how do you move that way? How did you play all those sports? How did you do all these things? I'm like, I don't know. Chiropractic. I mean, it helps you adapt to your environment, right? Gives you the best fighting chance. So I don't know. That's what I would say. But yeah, that's what I had. But what happened was, is that my body was conditioned that way for so long that I had some severe pain in my back and my side of my hip and to my knee, to where it was so bad that probably I could adjust probably like 3 or 4 or 5 patients. And then I'd have to go lay on the floor in an exam room for 5 minutes just to release the spasms. And then I would do that throughout the whole day, every week, lasted 6 to 8 months. I remember about 5 months in, I was talking to my coach about this and I'm like, I go, I don't know. I go, I got to get out of, I got to get better somehow. I go, I don't know what I need to do. I'm doing everything that I know. And I have other chiro buddies of mine giving me advice and I'm following what they're telling me. And we're just not, it wasn't getting any better. And I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe this is just something I have to deal with. And then he's like, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I can hire another doctor in my office if I need to, because I'm not getting out of the profession. And then I was like, and I go, you know, I've always talked about writing a book and I always talked about doing coaching and mindset stuff. I said, what if I go that route? And he's like, let's do it. What's the plan? Talked about, you know, we did the work. And then during that time, that's where my first book came out. I wrote my book during that, when I was in all that pain, and I was able to get that done. And then I was like, you know what? I wrote the book. I started the podcast. Things started to pick up. People were interested in coaching. They're like, hey, we love your material. We want to know more about you. How do you do coaching? Do you have classes? What do you do? And I was like, Don't have anything yet, but I'll get something. Give me a month. And then all of a sudden I started an online class for group coaching. That took off. And then I didn't mind group coaching, but then I started into one-on-ones and I started liking that a little bit more. And I was like, you know what? I could do some one-on-one coaching. And then I started there in 2019 and it's been all uphill since then.
Nice. So what does the process look like? So someone will come to you that needs coaching. It's maybe a dumb question, but they're, you know, at first, as you were mentioning, people would come to chiropractors, neck pain, back pain, headaches, that sort of thing. But since you launched a podcast and the book, people are coming to you with just more like general problems or.
Like, no, they still come with symptoms. It will always be that way until we learn to get out of the pain-based model, or get out of I have a problem, I need to see a doctor, rather than, hey, you know what? I need to make sure my nervous system's clear so that it's functioning better, because we help with the foundation of everything, because your nervous system is everything. You can't function without your nervous system taking in information, processing it through the brain, and then telling the body how to adapt. And that's even from a genetic standpoint too. The nervous system tells the genes what to produce based on what the environment's going, what's going on in the environment. And so that's where so I'll always have people coming in for that. I mean, I think in the last 5 years, I probably had maybe 3 to 5 people who just came in and said, hey, listen, I've been following you. I know about you. And I just want to be well. What is the best things I can do for my health? And yeah. I'm like, love this. I'm like, wow, okay, cool. This is fun. And, you know, yeah. And then we just start doing the work and there's still stuff we have to do, but it's just a little more exciting because they want to get well, they want wellness. They want to be the best version of themselves.
Right. So what would you tell that guy who comes in there? Just like, I want to be well. Like, what are the steps?
For me, when it comes to chiropractic, I'll ask like things like, you know, first, okay, there's a whole history that I have in their intake form. So I'm picking things through. And if they don't have any symptoms, then I'm looking at, all right, what's your physical stressors? What do you do from a physical standpoint? Are you sitting a lot? How are you standing a lot? Are you moving well? How much do you exercise? What about chemically? What are you eating and drinking every single day? Because these all influence how the nervous system adapts. And then how about mental, emotionally? Do you do any mindfulness? Is there meditation, breath work? And then what are their goals? How do you know this is working, right? That's a big key factor there. I want to know from them, how do you know that you are seeing something? Because it's not that you have to have symptoms or feeling better to know it's working. It's just like if you get your oil change all the time, you're never going to notice a difference in the way your car drives. As long as you get your oil change regularly, you'll never notice a difference. But if you let your oil change go too long and then you get it, you'll see a difference. And that's when you go too far. That's why that's the same scenario symptoms. So we'll walk them through. But then after that, we do scan technology. So the technology we use in my office is something called heart rate variability. It's very popular now, but the one we use in the office is a little different than what you can get on the markets. But that just basically tells us the quality of life of the individual, how well they adapt, how much is their brain stuck in stress, and how much can they charge their batteries to adapt and handle the stimulation and things that they deal with on a daily basis. So that's one technology. The second one is going to look at, in chiropractic, we talk about something called a subluxation, big fancy word, just means miscommunication. So it's a miscommunication between the brain and the body. And so what happens is, though, we measure temperature on the spine from both sides. This is stuff that's come out since the 1920s, and it's still valid and still true to this day. This is what I love about when you look at true health stuff. It transcends different eras and times. And so it's called thermal. But it will look and see how the nervous system is regulating temperature on the spine. And from that technology will also – so what it tells us is that if the nervous system cannot regulate temperature along the spine, that also means then that your health is being affected, because the nerves that control and regulate the temperature there are the same exact nerves that control your organs and glands. And so if there's no regulation in a certain area, there's no regulation to that organ. So that means that miscommunication now is affecting the individual's health. Whether they know it or they don't, there could be symptoms or no symptoms. There is a functional, there's a regulation issue going on right there. And then the last thing we'll do for them is going to look at something called surface electromyograph, which basically just means we're looking at the tiny little muscles in their spine that they can't control. And we're looking at the electricity that flows through there. And so what that tells us is, how well is their body efficiently handling gravity? And so the less they can handle gravity, the more stress on the nervous system, which creates more stress for the brain. And we can look at that, which affects their posture and things like that. Also, the why they have their posture the way they do. So that's what I would put them through, do a couple x-rays and see some structural stuff to show them how much the brain's been stuck in stress, because their posture, most 99% of the time people come in the office, they don't have great posture. And so we can show from a physical side, hey, look, this is how much your brain has been stuck in stress, because look at the patterns and look at the angles and degrees and all the other stuff that's not in perfect alignment like it should be in.
Gotcha. Switching subjects a little bit. Let's, that was interesting though about the, I didn't realize that you've got different temperatures in your body along your spine. Like that's, and that's cool. They can measure all that.
Yeah.
What about, in terms of your journey? Cause you know, I always like to ask my guests about their dating lives, and you're married, right?
Yeah.
What was your kind of dating journey? Like, you know, starting out when most guys kind of get into this stuff in either high school or college and get married. Anything, what was going on with that?
Yeah, when I was in high school, you know, I went to an all boys high school, so that was always fun and interesting. So we can have more conversations for that matter. It was always fascinating to hear the guys talk about certain women. You know how it is. Oh, this woman's so hot, or this one's wow. I'm hoping that, you know, all that, you know, the guys talk about. And sure. I was that guy who didn't have that big of an ego to be like, oh yeah, look at who I've been with and this and that. Unfortunately, I am not proud to say this, but back in my day, it was all about how much tail or how much you can, it was just that game that we all played. And it was like, sure, how many have you slept with? How many you have slept with? How many you, and, you know, and it was one of those things. I never really bragged. I never talked about it, but I did have rules in that way where you're honest with someone, you're straightforward with them as much as you can be, and you never, you know, play games on them or anything along that line. So I dated a lot. I did something in my college years, which I didn't even know until later on. I talked to a licensed clinical social worker, and he's like, this is what I teach, this is what I recommend. And I'm like, really? I just did it naturally. I didn't know. I would date like 3 to 5 women at a time, and I had rules to it. You don't make out, you don't do anything along that nature, you just date them and so forth. And he's like, how did you not get to the point of making out? I was like, I don't know. It was very quick for me. It was like 2 to 3 dates, and I was like, okay, I know who I may be interested in, and then I'm gonna put all my energy into that. And I just did that for, I don't know, it just made sense. I liked the options to choose, and so that was kind of my thing, and it worked for the most part. But
physical.
I'm sorry?
You would date multiple women, just go on dates, but you wouldn't get physical.
No physical. I didn't feel comfortable. I felt like it was something for me that I was just like, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm being honest and straightforward. So then when I was like, okay, this is the one I want to date, then it was a whole different story. But yeah, I've had a very wild, interesting time in my life with women, and it's been a great experience. As I was sharing with you on my podcast, it was one of the things where those were my greatest lessons. Some of them I'm not fond of, but it's one of the things where it helped me learn to grow and evolve to where I am today. I wouldn't say I was like a womanizer or anything like that. I wasn't like that. But I enjoyed the dating. I liked the beginning of the experience. And it was one of those things I was kind of addicted to. Like, this is new. This is fresh. All right, great. Yeah. Be with someone for a short period of time. Then I'd be like, oh, this is not fun anymore. So let's move on to the next. And I would just continually do that in my early age. It was more in high school I did this. Undergrad was a little bit, but high school and undergrad. When I got to chiropractic school, I was more, I had my first real like long-term, well, I wouldn't say 15, 16 was my first real relationship, but I was with someone for a year and a half, but it was in my undergrad. I was with them for like 3 years, and that was like my longest ever. And then from there, I was kind of like, okay, I don't really know if I want to do more of the kind of things I've been doing in the past. Cause as I kept getting older, women were more in the physical, and I was just like, I want to change that script. I share the story sometimes. My wife and I don't think we kissed until the third date or something, second date or third date. And her friend was like, listen, whatever you do, if you do not make out with this guy by the third date, you're going into the friend zone. She's like, you better make a move. So she made the move on me first. I'll never forget. We're 5 blocks away from dropping her off, and I'm at a stoplight, and then boom, she just came to make out with me. I was like, what the heck? And then I was like, all right, cool. We'll take this slow though. But you know, I want to make sure we do it right.
It's really funny because, I mean, the way you describe it, it's like totally opposite of the standard narrative. You know, it's the guy always trying to push and the girl, like, you know, putting the guy in the friend zone. And I tell my clients all the time, like, if you can if you can find a way to manage your thirstiness, which is basically like, you know, don't be overly invested in sex, women will usually make the move on you, you know? And they're a lot, typically women are pretty like smooth about it, or they just, you know, they're not like in their head thinking about it like guys are. And as long as you can remain patient, that will typically happen. I mean, obviously there's situations where that doesn't hold true. You're just like totally boring and lame. but yeah, I love that what you were saying about your wife having a conversation with her friend. Like, you better make a move soon or you're going to be in the friend zone. Cause that's whatever you like. That's a dude's talk.
Yeah. No, you know, and don't get me wrong, I learned that when I was young, right? When I was younger, I was the opposite of that. I couldn't hold back. I was like, oh, this is where we got to get to. Let's win that. I was so driven to impress. I was so driven to be so over the top. And it always worked out, but not always, but most of the time it did. But the problem is you put yourself on a pedestal, and then all of a sudden they see your negatives, and it's like, whoa, it was just a big bombshell. But calming the thirst, I would say, is one of the, and it wasn't like I didn't have intentions with my wife to be like, okay, I'm going to have her do this. It wasn't like in a manipulative thing, because really all I wanted to do was like, I want to take this as slow as possible and do it right. I want to get to know her. I don't want to go the physical. I've done all that in the past in my life, and I've had multiple relationships where it was kind of the point where I'm like, I want this one to be right. I want to do all that I can that I've learned in the last, you know, 10, 12 years. What was it? 10 years, 11 years of dating. What is it that I can be in relationships? What is it that I can be?
How old were you at that time?
I'm sorry?
How old were you?
When we started dating? Yeah. I was 28. So I'm 37 okay, right now.
So it sounds like you were able to kind of quench that thirst by having a lot of experience in the first place.
Yeah.
And realizing like, okay, I don't need to do that anymore. I'd rather find someone who's a good fit.
I got it all out of my system, as some guys like to say, right?
Yes.
You got it out of your system, and now you're kind of like, you know, all right. You know, and I got it out early on. So like, even in my undergrad, I was kind of like more of the slower pace kind of an individual, but it was a point where, you know, I just got tired of seeing a failed relationship after failed relationship. And I was just kind of like, okay, there's something wrong with me. Obviously, I keep having certain issues. And that's why I said the relationships taught me, they gave me a window to really see deep within myself. And so then when it came to my wife, when we first started dating, it was like, all right, I'm going to take everything I learned for once. I've worked on myself for 6 months. I think I'm ready for this. All right, let's see if this is a good fit. And I actually knew her 3 years before in the business association that we were in. And so I just knew her from, you know, casual conversations, nothing to anything. We're both in relationships anyhow. Not that we were like interested at that time. It was just, we would talk, hi, just normal stuff. But then it was one of those things where, you know, just what do they always say? The one who is the delayed gratification. It's mm-hmm. one of the most powerful things I could ever recommend. So since I got it out early in my system, that's what made it a lot easier, where sometimes I see guys who didn't do that, then they become that later in their life because you got to get it out of your system.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually, if you don't, you'll go back to it. It's like what I like to say that, you know, you can't really avoid it. It'll come back and you'll have that desire, right? You gotta do this, gotta do this. And then if you're doing it later in life, it's just harder to do. You're now the old guy chasing tail and got that stigma, or, you know, you're the sugar daddy sponsor and you gotta do it at some point, but it's not as good as doing it earlier on. So how'd you know your wife was the one?
It took a little bit. I struggled with it. I knew she was different. She didn't have a fear of like putting me in check, or she was very assertive, and she would like not even respond to my text messages when we first started dating. She was like, we had a date and then she wouldn't talk to me for a couple of days. I'm like, man, what the heck's going on here? I'm like, did I mess up? What happened here? And she's like, I'm just busy with work. And I'm like, okay, is that a good excuse? I'm talking to my buddy, like, man, I really interested in her, but I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if she's interested. She's showing me signs that she's not. So maybe I should just back off a little bit. But it was just, you know, over time, I would say it was about a year and a half into our relationship to where, and some maybe say, wow, you didn't know for a year and a half. Well, for me, I take things slow and I take it deep. So if I'm going to make that decision, it's one of the things where I'm like, yeah, there was potential right off the bat. I knew that. into the relationship, I started to see how we can grow together. That was very important to me. Like, if we have issues, but she's willing to work through them and grow in that, I found that very valuable. And so I remember we were at a trip in Austin, and all of a sudden we were just having conversation and talking and about some issues that we had. We were going through some really hard times, and all of a sudden it was just like awakening moment. All of a sudden I'm like, this is it. This is her. This is it. I'm done. And then 4 months later, I asked her to, take her hand in marriage. And she said yes. And thankfully, she didn't say yes initially, even though she will say she did. Cause the way I proposed, I put the ring on my dog's, collar, and I was trying to get her to look at it. I had a whole movie thing. I tricked her into, like, Google has this thing where they take your images and they just put music, you can put music on and it'll seam them beautifully. What she didn't know is I was actually creating the whole slide, and I was showing her history and this, and the dog was right there and the ring's dangling. She can't see it. So then after like about 10 minutes of this, I was like, okay, enough. I go, let me show you this. I'm like, I'm just trying to ask you to marry me. And she got in tears. And then she didn't say yes until we got to my parents' house, which at that time, they only lived like eight blocks away. But
didn't say yes right away.
Yeah, she did. She said she did. I was like, I never heard yes until we got to my parents.
That's like a big old matzo ball hanging out there.
I mean, based on her reaction, you knew it was a yes, but I always joke with her and give her a hard time about it. But yeah. No, it was about a year and a half. It was like my yes to everything that I knew. There was always that potential in the beginning. Like, I was like, man, this can, we had our hiccups in the beginning, and you get through the honeymoon stage. And then after that, it's kind of like, you know, that was one big factor that, you know, matter what, we're going to work through things. And she's still like that till the day, 9 years later, when we have an issue, we'll take our time away and then we come back. And sometimes she'll be the one that mostly initiates it. I kind of maybe have gotten used to that a little bit. But that was a key factor for me. One of my highest values that I needed was that.
Gotcha. And what about family, kids?
Not yet. We don't have any kids yet. It's in the making soon. Hoping the next year. We've been, just, you know, with a business and traveling and trying to travel a little, well, now it's been limited. We got some big moves coming up after that. She's like, okay, we need to settle down. I'm going to be 38 this year. She's going to be 34. Still young. It's interesting nowadays. A lot of people in my circle, and they're, most of them are chiropractors, but they not all of them, but they're having kids later in life, like in 40s and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to be, I'm already going to be an old dad. I don't want to be that old, but yeah, we're looking, hopefully in the next year, we can get that started.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I'm 38. I'll be 39 in June. My girlfriend's 22, so she's in no rush.
But see, there you go. a lot of the coaches I've had and stuff, they're like had their first kid in their 40s, but their wives are about my age. So then I'm like, oh, that works out perfectly then, you know? Yeah. And same in your situation. You know, you're in no rush.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, you know, I figure, you know, there's that little bit of, you know, you don't want to be the dad who's too old to throw a ball with your kid, or like, you know, be so old you don't have grandkids sort of thing. But I'm, you know, now I'm starting to feel like I'm about, you know, like if it happened now, I'd be fine with it. Whereas like 2 years ago, I'd be like, oh my God, hell no. And I was so it's, you know, and so many of, I guess, like, kind of like the standard narrative, at least in the US, people are definitely starting later. And I see that more married couples are like getting dogs and treating the dogs like kids.
We do. Yeah. We're one of those.
We were a dog family too. We got two dogs. And yeah, they're like our boys, you know. The pet industry, by the way, has completely fucking taken off. Like, I wish I would have invested in the pet industry like 10 years ago with all the you know, people our age just like putting kids off and getting dogs.
It's a big business, man. Big business.
Yeah. No, so that's cool. Thanks for sharing all that about your relationship and what it was like. Cause you know, it's always interesting to hear from guests, like, cause you know, every guy's got a different story, and it sounds like, but the stories are different, but every guy who I talk to that seems like they have like a stable, healthy relationship went through that getting it out of their system phase. Yeah. At a prior age, and now they're able to be, you know, happy and content in that relationship. And do you guys work together, or?
We do. Yeah. We run our office together. So she's the operating person, you know, front desk, all that fun stuff, office manager. And I'm the doc in the office. She's my boss. I always say, like, a patient, I mean, that you got to go talk to the boss. And I'm like, she's a boss in more in many aspects of our life, not just in personal. But I joke about that because the patient's like, I'm like, we have a very mutual, we have an agreement. We're a partnership, like in a business, right? Nothing can be decided without both of us being involved.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's good that you guys have your, you know, your roles and you're able to, you know, work together and enjoy that, like, experience together versus, you know, some guys are like, ah, never work with your wife. And other guys are like, you know, why not? I'm more in, like, your camp. Like, why not?
You know, it's interesting. I will say, like, I think, and who knows, later down the road, we'll look at this one day and we'll be like, you know, I think working together in the business actually helped our relationship more and our marriage, because you're forced to in a business to communicate. You have to. You have no choice. I mean, something comes up, you need to talk. If we hit roadblocks or, you know, issues in the business, you have to communicate. And it, sometimes it's not smooth communication. We're humans. You know, we get triggered our own ways. We're both on our healing journey. But at the same token, it has helped us so much in our communication there that when it comes to personal stuff now, it's easier for us to have that type of communication. And just for the record, I always like to tell people, I work with her, but I don't see her all day. Because when I'm in the office, I'm seeing patients. I'm in and out. I wouldn't say high volume. Chiropractors, it'll be like, that's not high volume. But I'm pretty much, I don't see her throughout the whole entire day. And then at the end of the day, I'd be like, how's your day? Anything fun? Anything new? Anything exciting? What happened at the front? I have, you know, because I have no clue what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And how about in terms of business, scaling your business? Obviously, you've got, you know, your practice, your chiropractic practice, and you have the podcast and you have your book. How does all that stuff kind of work together? And in terms of, like, growing the business, scaling this, do you have any other doctors that work with you, or do you have any plans to grow it in that capacity?
Yeah, right now, I mean, you know, scaling is always an issue for every business, you know, and for me, it was one of the things where, you know, like the book and the podcast and my coaching stuff, that's like a separate entity in a sense. Some people are like, why don't you merge them together? You know, they're kind of similar. And I'm like, I'd rather keep them separate for now. Eventually, I may merge up portions of it in some way. But when it comes to the vision of the practice right now is more of just continue what we're doing. I'm still trying to, you know, I'm building up my mindset coaching stuff when I have time. It's more of, it's a practice I'm invested in. So my clients know that I'm, like, very invested with them. But from a business standpoint, I'm sitting there going, okay, there's only so much I can do there right now because I do have the other office I'm working, plus book, podcast. And, you know, my wife and I started another business just during COVID, which was just in November we did. It was something we've been wanting to do, getting into real estate and, like, flipping homes. She's big into design stuff. I've been practicing woodworking for about 4 or 5 years. So I'm kind of like, and I grew up in the construction world. So I'm like, I kind of know things. I can't be screwed over by someone to a certain degree because I'll know how things need to be done. And so I'll know if they're trying to fish me a different story or they're trying to take advantage of us. And so we got our first property and we've been working on that. It's been fun. So we try to manage, but eventually the vision of the practice is to get another doc in the office so I can minimize my time so I can keep balancing everything else out. Cause right now I'm almost maxed on my coaching side. And then I have online classes. I haven't wrote a book in, well, it's been 2 years and there'll be 2 years in October. It's been a little over a year now. And I've been saying I'd be writing at least one book a year. And I'm a little behind right now, but I know I'll be coming. Once I get some stuff settled in, I'll have the time to really focus on my writing and start continuing to write more books.
Cool. Yeah. The, I think real estate as, like, a side business or a side hustle, just in terms of, just as an investment, of course, is an amazing, my favorite sort of way to go about it. I've got a side business of vacation rental real estate. So I've got Airbnb properties. I'm not into flipping, but if I knew how to do it, I probably would be. That's cool that, you know, the woodwork angle of it and, you know, finding those deals, doing the rehab and flipping, you can make big money doing that.
Yeah. It's just finding the time. Like, it was great. Cause when we got the property, I looked at my dad, he's retired and he grew up, he had another business working at a warehouse for a grocery store, but his side business was laying carpet. And, so I looked at him and I said, okay, it's in, and the house is, like, it's in Tennessee. It's not in Chicago where I'm at. So some people are like, why, what's going on? I was like, well, I've always been looking for land in Tennessee. I want to get a nice big prop piece of land and eventually build a house and move there. And so, but my real estate guy's like, hey, I have a great investment opportunity. I don't know if you're interested, but this is going to go quick. Let me know. I was like, hey, let's get on FaceTime. Let me see it. So when it happened, I looked at my dad and I said, listen, you know, my dad and I, we weren't close growing up. He was the type of dad who he was in survival mode, working, doing what he had to do. So I'd be stuck on jobs with him instead of going out. I finally get the girl, right? I finally get the girl who I've been waiting to get for months, right? One of the hottest girls. Everybody would be jealous. And I finally land the date. He comes home from work. Hey, we got to go do a carpet job. Well, how long is it going to be? I got a date tonight. He's like, you know, we'll get done when we get done. I was like, come on, man, give me some details here. I got a date tonight. There's no way I can't mess this up. I've been waiting 2.5 months on this. And he'd be like, nope, we're going to do work until we do it. And that's just was his way. And then I actually had to cancel the date because we worked until midnight that night. So yeah, it was fun experiences, but I forgot where I'm going with all this. Oh, anyhow, the investment side of things. But it was a nice relationship to create with my dad, because then now I go, okay, you're retired. You ain't got much going on. You're coming with me and let's go to work. And right. So it's been a fun little. Yeah, it's basically what it is. I'm not, no joke. I mean, my dad's 69. He's going to be 70 next month. People are like, you're putting him to work. I was like, listen, my dad has been in physical labor his whole life. I don't stress him. I'm like, just do what you can and we're good. But if you look at him, he looks like he's in his 50s. He's very still well to do body wise. And he's a beast. This guy is some of the stuff he's working when he like ripping up a floor, spends a whole day ripping up a kitchen floor that's glued and everything. I'm like, Dad, take the machine. Let me do that. I'll take care of it. I'm going to get it done. Don't worry about it. So it's been fun. It's a little like a nice little bonding relationship with him as I also have a business that I started, and it's me and my wife, but he comes for the tag along to have fun.
That's great. Yeah. So he's, this is a place in Tennessee you guys got.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So are you going to flip it or actually build it out for yourself?
Originally, this one, it's in a suburb area. It's a really, it's up and coming. It's one of the hottest markets right now. And so originally we're looking at possibly renting it. But then the market's so hot, we're just like, we'd rather just flip it and then get something. Again, we're still looking for land, and that's what we're kind of, our focus is right now. But eventually when we do go down there, we want to get a cabin, to be honest, a cabin in the mountains, Airbnb it. We'll fix it up, make it a little bit different than all the rest of them. And then just rent them out, because it's just something that, again, we want. That's the whole thing, right? We got flips. I talk about like in stocks, right? Stocks, you have short-term trade, day trades, and you have long-term. So I'm always like, yeah, my flips are like my short-term trades. How can I get something quick for capital? I take the capital to build my long-term gains. And so as I keep building up the shorts, because you can make quick money there. And then I can build my longer portfolio of like rentals, or, because I tell my wife, the way I want to do it is, I don't want to have to worry about an investment plan or 401k or stuff like that. Even those are important, and I'm not, you know, giving a financial advice here. In my world, I want to control everything and be my own bank. That's always been my vision since I was 28, 29, and I had to learn it. I didn't know how to do this. I don't come from wealth. No one had taught me things. I had to learn on my own. So I didn't even know where to go for books and stuff, but I just started self-teaching myself these things. And eventually the people came who are experts and gave me advice. And so I told my wife, I want to have enough rentals to where the monthly income we get from that is our retirement, and everything else we do is all bonuses. And that way I don't have to worry about it. If we want to get a loan to start something, we have properties to use to do that. And now we've become our own bank rather than depending on a banking system or depending on XYZ.
Totally. Yeah. You don't want to depend on anyone. That's my sort of fundamental theory too. It's like, if someone else is managing your shit, like, good luck. You're likely to end up in a situation where they manage it for their own benefit instead of yours. So that's why I love real estate too. It's like, you're in control of it. It's a tangible asset. You can rent it out short-term, long-term, sell it, whatever, you know?
When we took the risk on, because my wife's like, at one point she almost wanted to cancel. And she's like, I don't know, this is too risky, especially with everything going on right now. And I was just like, listen, this is a prime opportunity. What's the worst thing that can happen? We flip it. Or let's say the market crashes. Fine, we rent it. You know, and then I'll just, you know, whatever. I go, there's so many ways we can make this work. I don't think I'm too worried about it. Like, I wouldn't say it's foolproof, because anything can show up. But it was one of the things where I'm like, but I don't see much. I teach a lot of this stuff. Vision, don't, you know, what you put your energy to is what you're going to create. And so I don't want to put my energy there. I'd rather focus on, what can I create? How do I want to see it happen? Right. And I'm not saying I'm not avoiding the weeds and the grass if it's there, but at the same token, I'm just like, I know what I can create and what I can do, and that's what I can control. So rather I just put my energy into that. And if something happens, well, then we just adapt when it comes. But if it doesn't, then everything worked out.
Totally. Yeah. So cool. We discussed some good shit on here. We discussed dating, investing, sort of anything else, you know, that you wanted to really touch on at the, you know, what you want the listeners to know.
You know, for all that, you know, if you're in dates and stuff like that, I know you're the expert in this. So just from my world and stuff, you know, one of the things is I helped out. I had a client one time hire me literally for relationships. And I was like, listen, I'm not a relationship person. I can share stuff that works on that level, you know, universal laws. I can tie that all together. But I'm like, I'm just want to be transparent with you that I am not a relationship person. So if I'm going to work with you, I'm working on you. I'm not working on anything else. I'm just working on you, your belief systems, and all these. I laid it all out. She's like, I'm in. Let's do it. And so it was funny because the way I don't know if you ever heard of this or stuff, but when you're looking for that partner, let's say you're a single guy, woman, doesn't matter. And you want to, let's say you're ready to settle down. You're like, okay, I'm at that age. I want to settle down. I want to find that right person. You know, you hire Robbie to teach you all the tricks in the games. He's Will Smith and Hitch here. So he's the man. you're not, I don't like to say that. You're not Will Smith. You are your own person.
I describe that too. When people ask me what I do, I'm like, you've seen the movie Hitch, Will Smith? It's like that. Because otherwise they think I'm some like idiot pickup artist, or there's all sorts of,
oh, you know, of course. But I hate when like someone's like, I had one time somebody would say, oh, yeah, you're the Tony Robbins of wellness. And I was like, thank you. I go, but I'm not Tony Robbins, but thank you. Because I'm like, and I remember, who was her name? Nicole. I forget her name. Anyhow, she was like, someone called her like the next Oprah. And she's like, no, don't put me up to Oprah. And they're like, why? You have that potential. She's like, no, Oprah is Oprah because she's Oprah. I'm me because I'm me. So that's why I'm very strict. I'm very like stringent about that. But anyhow, long story short, if you're looking for that one of the greatest things to do is you always write a list. There's that list of writing all those qualities of what you're looking for, what you want. Some people say like in the spiritual world, like you write out the list and you're going to get everything of that. I'm always like, I think you're going to get everything that's the most valuable to you. In that, but you got to look at what's the most valuable thing you look at in someone else. And it's fascinating because it works every time. Like it worked for me every time. It's just, I wasn't crystal clear on my vision of what I wanted. So I'd be like, oh, I think this is great. This is what I want, you know? And then all of a sudden here she comes and I'm like, yeah, this is pretty much it. Cool. Get in the relationship. And all of a sudden towards the end, I'm like, no, this was the wrong one. What happened here? And again, going through the process, as I go through each relationship, it was helping me get more clarity and vision of what I really wanted. So then when it came to my wife, it was easy. I already knew, like it was some of those things I had written down. I'm going, yep, she has that. Okay. What other things she has on the list that I had? And she pretty much had everything on there, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah. A lot of the time it's the stuff that you're not clear on and you weren't really thinking about. Right. And then that partner shows up exactly as you were manifesting her, but then you're like, oh fuck, I should have thought about that part completely because I got exactly what I want, but I didn't know I wanted, like, I wasn't clear that that's what I was actually looking for. You know, a lot of guys will like, you know, I've seen it and I saw it with myself. It's like you want the girl who's so hot and fun and crazy and like never boring, right? But you forget to also say, oh, you want her to be loyal and trustable and, you know, someone that you can actually communicate with, right? But you forget to write that stuff down and you're just like, I just want the fun, hot girl, right? And then you get that girl and she goes and like, you know, screws your buddy in your RV at Burning Man. And you're like, I should have wrote down the other stuff on that. So.
But it's great because you go through that journey, and even though it sucks sometimes because you're like, man, because that's how I got in each relationship. And, you know, they last a year, year and a half. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know what happened there. And but then you go back, and that's every time I go back into self deep reflection, I always be like, dang it. I asked for that, but I totally forgot about that side of it. Or, you know, and they always say, be careful what you wish for. Man, that is so true on so many levels, especially in relationship and life, whatever it is. And it's just the more clarity and the better vision you have of what you desire. And it's fascinating because like in my marriage now, it was always something I always wanted. I wanted to, I didn't want to have everything. I mean, I don't know what people want in a marriage. I wanted to have that, but I also wanted to just be, lost my train of thought here, but more of a vision of how I wanted to see it. And so I kind of mapped that out in that way. And I saw that in my head always as a wheel. And then it's fascinating because now I've been married for 5 years and I look back at it and I'm just like, this is exactly what I wanted. Like, maybe, I mean, I could get really nitpicking, but like, there's this or that, but it's like, it's everything I want. My wife lets me be me. I let her be her, and we enjoy our lives together. And it's a very nice unionship. And it's just one of those things where going through that process, going through the ups and downs, all that I went through, it's kind of like it fine tunes things so well to where all of a sudden it's just like in life, right? Anything you do, you start something, you're not gonna be that great with it. As you keep working at it, you build that confidence, you start to get better clarity. You know what you want more, or, you know, I would say it's more important to know what you don't want than you want. And then you just keep moving forward until, you know, you get that crystal clear aspect.
Yeah. You get closer and closer. Tell us, where can people find you, get your book, listen to your podcast? I'll have show notes and links and all that stuff, but yeah, tell us.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So my books, I have two of them, Rediscover Your Greatness and A Walk in the Dark. You can find them anywhere. They're on Amazon, Kindle. We have, Audible, all the different versions, out there. If you want to get if it's in the States, you can always, an autographed copy. You can go to my website, empoweryourreality.com. You can look and see under books. So you'll see both of them there. You can order right online. I just charge for shipping and handling, and I send it out to you. And then you can check me out at my podcast, the mindfulexperiment.com. And then, I'm on many different social media links and all that, but you can find that all on the website. The website is the hub of everything of what I do.
Cool. Yeah. And I'll have links there. And, I think, check out the Inner Confidence episode. That was my interview on your show. Guys, for all you guys watching, you might be wondering, why am I wearing this shirt that says fucking and then something else in Russian? This is fucking PizDiet. And I actually have an Instagram account with this ridiculous thing. The kind of the story behind this is when I moved to Ukraine, I was like, all right, I want to learn Russian. The first word I learned was PizDiet, which basically means like shit or pussy. But when you put them together, it means like shit happens or this is bullshit. And when I made this shirt, everyone wanted one. And it's the best way. Like, if you just wear this shirt, girls will come up to you and they'll be like, I love your shirt. And it's like the greatest sort of, you know, in the game, they call it peacocking. It's just a way to open a conversation. So if you guys want a fucking PCS shirt, leave a 5-star review, send a screenshot to my email, Robbie@interconfidence, and I'll send you out a shirt. Yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in. And Vic, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your cool, you know, all the awesome stories and wisdom. And, you know, I'm glad we were kind of all over the place in this episode, which is awesome. We covered the investment stuff, relationships, building businesses, and that's right up the listener's alley, I hope. So thanks, brother.
Thanks for having me on, bud.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.